Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your unbearable wokeness of being, of music, news, and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama.
That was Formation, and here we are in Formation. Not exactly as elegant as on the Super Bowl field last week, but it's a pretty great formation. Wesley Morris, say hi to the people.
Hello, John.
Jenna
Hello,
Wortham. People. Jenna Wortham, say hi to the people.
Hi.
We're a little scalene right now. What are we? What are we? Isosceles?
No, I feel like we're pretty equidistant.
Equidistant. That's the one I was looking
That's
for.
That's our formation.
We're equidistant.
Yeah. Hey, we're matching Jenna's necklace.
Yes.
Which is a triangle.
Perfect.
Is that an Illuminati triangle?
Always.
Oh, good. Okay.
I mean, obviously.
So you're on brand today.
I claim it. I do claim That's, it. Unlike Beyonce, I do.
Fair enough.
My squad. Illuminati.
That is actually the most Illuminati thing. That's like post Illuminati is to claim it.
Yeah.
That's very next level. So we've gathered here in the shadow of the Illuminati to talk about Beyonce at the Super Bowl, Beyonce's formation. We're going to talk about Rihanna later. We're going to talk about Lady Gaga, assuming Wesley can get over
being attacked.
The swarm
by the monsters. No, I stand by what I was asking and wondering about her.
Okay, we will get to that, and then we will talk about the nature of how artists are introducing and rolling out their projects in increasingly complex and bizarre ways.
So complex.
In the first quarter of 2016. But first, Formation. Saturday afternoon. Where were you when Beyonce dropped Formation?
Oh, where was I when I got my invitation to Howard Homecoming? I was at home.
True.
About to go to spin class, and my phone started blowing up.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, who got married? Who died?
Who died?
What happened?
Yep. Who died?
Turns out Beyonce was like, hey, hello. You forgot about me. I'm still here. That's your fault.
She slayed, but no one died.
I mean, oh,
we
my
all
God.
Died. We all
many died. Yeah. Many are still dying.
I couldn't handle
an
it.
Ongoing state of dying. Wesley Morris?
I was in a corner. I was on an actual street corner when I took my phone. I'm not a phone walker. Like, I am stationary when I'm looking
very
at my
civil.
Phone.
It's a very civil thing.
On the streets.
I'm definitely a phone walker.
So on this particular street, I looked at my phone and I got an invitation from Tidal telling me, come listen to Beyonce's new single.
Wait, is the first real giveaway of the first real secret of this podcast that you maintain an active Tidal subscription?
Why does it have to be a secret?
No, apparently it's no longer a secret.
No, I mean,
I'm a
proud Tidal subscriber. Okay, not proud.
Said.
I'm a function. I'm like a
you
I'm
have
obligated Tidal subscriber.
You're like a contract. You have a contract that you have not yet canceled. Like, you basically took the 90-day free trial and just did never.
Because I like my phone. I want to keep the phone, so I'm putting up with this particular service.
Oh, is that what? Yes.
No, it's not a Samsung phone.
Can we just have a brief detour? How often are you using Tidal?
I mean, in the last 2 weeks, a lot. Between Beyonce and Rihanna, I use it frequently. And I've been poking around to see what other offerings there are in
good.
Tidal.
What's really good on Tidal? It's like you've been to some foreign country that none of us have been to. Like you travel to like Uzbekistan and like just Jenna and I have not been there.
There's this one restaurant.
Yeah. It's flames, huh?
Called Anti.
Yeah.
Delicious food.
Serious question on the sidebar before we continue. Is Tidal the new Netflix? Because, like, you get Netflix because you're like, oh, maybe I want to watch, like, House of Cards or Orange is the New Black. But, hey, there's all this other stuff. Is Tidal trying to have that model where it's like, hey, I want a little Rihanna. Hey, I want this weird Beyonce thing. No. Hey, I want this concert simulcast.
I feel like Tidal is like Peaches in Bed-Stuy. Like, you go there because you want to support Black businesses, and it's good, and it's a spot, and it's a turn-up. It's not really necessarily the best.
Is it a turn-up?
Beyonce always puts her remixes on there, or there'll be mixtapes, or there's like
there's
some
always
new artist.
A reason to
there's
go.
Always something on there. Yeah, it's but
like, I would say that Rihanna's record wasn't like put out; it was stumbled out.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Yes. Like, I feel like
it was coughed.
You were putting up with a level of frustration in that you did Netflix is long ago. I mean, never had any Netflix issues. I mean, they will probably get some tweets from people saying, I have. But generally, they are not known for effing things up from a rollout standpoint.
No, whereas I did not expect this to take a turn to the pro Tidal. This is definitely not what I was anticipating. This is.
If I pay for Spotify, I'll pay for Tidal. I mean, it's look, I canceled
I'm with you,
Prime.
Yes.
I've do got spend, some, do you expense
some
it?
Loose income. No, can we?
I don't know.
I need to start.
I'm about to find out. That's the first question I'm asking when we go upstairs afterwards. Yes, yeah, seriously.
Twitter account, help me out.
Yeah. But I do think that there is something, I mean, you are getting at something really interesting about the way now we've gotten to where TV is with music and where movies are going, but is all things related to movies like at a dinosaur's pace. Mm-hmm. But we're getting to a point where you're going to have to subscribe to get music from your favorite people.
Yes, exactly.
And they're going to be behind firewalls that you need to mm-hmm. express fandom
in order to access. Although music is the most jailbreakable of those media because it's small. That's why music trading was always.
I'm not a programmer. I'm mm-hmm. not a science, computer mm-hmm. science person. I can now think of ways in which, I mean, without like giving you coding, mm-hmm. I can think of ways in which it will be just as difficult to get something like Beyoncé's album as it is going to be to get Bosch out of the Amazon app.
Yes.
Do you know?
It's interesting because I feel like, say 5 to 10 years ago, artists were beginning to experiment with like, oh, you can access my thing, but like we have our own widget, basically. Like
right.
You got to be in my widget. But that was before social media. That was before phone. Like everybody was looking on phones as opposed to.
Do you think Radiohead jumped the gun? Were they ahead?
I think they were. Ahead
I mean,
of
they're
the
ahead
gun.
Of their time.
I think
obviously,
they were.
But
yes. I mean, that said, I do think that. Look, there are enough programs. I don't need to say the names of the programs, but there's easy ways to like jailbreak audio off of fixed recordings.
Yes, yes,
like
yes.
That is not a challenge. I mean, it's maybe a challenge for me because I'm no good at technology. The thing that I take comfort in is there will always be some 14-year-old who will do that work. Anything that has ever been only released via Tidal or only released via whatever within an hour or less, it's always been made available. And I think Beyoncé did it herself this time where she was like, sure, it'll be on Tidal, but yeah, it's on YouTube too.
So what was that conversation like between her and Jay-Z?
Great question.
Where she was like,
honey, yeah.
Jay-Z's like, oh, you got a new song? And Beyoncé's like, mm-hmm. And just keeps on working on it. Yes, I do, Bill. Yes, I do. Because she, I mean, Beyoncé.com and YouTube, that was it. That was it. Is it on iTunes? I mean, I have
it's not,
all,
no, it's sorry,
not
sure,
anywhere.
No, iTunes.
No, it's Tidal, YouTube, and her website.
The most ultimate FUBU. I mean, it's just, you know, for the people. Yep. And mm-hmm. There's something, I mean, that's the thing that fascinates me, which is that, like, Beyoncé doesn't need this song to be Beyoncé or to make her mm-hmm. any money. It's like,
so
we're still,
this is,
you know.
This is the question
thing.
That I have.
Talk.
I'm thinking a lot about Adele in the last 4 days.
Yeah, sure.
And among other people, I've been thinking about all the people in that Rushmore-ish Mount Olympus conversation.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I love about Adele mm-hmm. and the people responsible for Adele is that, and I guess the numbers are so incredible that like, why wouldn't they brag about them every week? But we have numbers. I feel like the Beyoncé apparatus either hides from numbers, transcends
she's
numbers.
She's post data.
Right. Yeah. I feel like she is sort of somewhat immune or absolved, grandfathered out of this quantification conversation.
And weirdly, I would also contend that Rihanna is in that same space.
But except once you do get numbers, I mean, because the sort of one of the sub conversations with her last week was, oh, well, because of the way Billboard works and the way Tidal handled, you know, did her wrong, look at those paltry numbers.
Yeah, but I feel like that's why, but I feel like it's the least relevant metric.
I know, but
like,
it is a narrative.
So true.
I agree.
And the more I think about and maybe we'll just start talking about Rihanna.
But I do think this question of what, I mean, this was sort of after, people have been talking about this for the last couple of weeks, which is like, what does it mean when your success is not built around how many people bought your album mm-hmm. or how many people streamed your album, because that's not directly correlated to what it means to be successful. And even in Beyoncé's case, I was listening to the Reed podcast before we came down here, and Kid mm-hmm. Fear and Crystal were talking about Formation as a song is great. It's good. It's a banger. It comes on, you dance to it. But it's not about the song. It's about the video, everything she's trying to put forth in the video, the representation, being seen, seeing her fans, and then the tour. Like, the tour is what we want. It's like...
Well, and also the tour, I mean, let's talk about money making. Yeah. The tour is what Beyonce wants, because Beyonce doesn't make a lot of money off you spending 99 cents
iTunes. I mean, nobody does anymore. No, that's the thing.
Like, when you're spending $75 for a ticket.
$75?
Did you find $75 tickets? Can I have them?
Stop. Give me your $75.
My tickets were twice that.
$75.
Yeah, come on now. Come on now. Is there a ticket available for $75?
$75 ticket?
That's great. That's great. Crazy. Well, actually, the ticket is for me to sit in one of your laps. So
That's $75.
Yeah, no, that's actually probably more expensive. with Rihanna specifically in those terms, here's my sort of paradoxical hot take on the Rihanna rollout, which obviously was sloppy. Like, that, it was bumbled in a couple different ways. I think Rihanna understands that there is going to be a certain percentage of listeners, fans, who aren't going to buy the record. They're going to find ways to download it illegally. They're going to stream it. They're whatever. By turning those people into those million free downloads, and she got paid for those million downloads, she basically monetized all the kind of like black market interest in Rihanna, and she made money off
genius.
Of it. She made Samsung pay for the black market interest.
And Samsung doesn't care. That money's nothing to them. I mean, that money makes them look great. They got to take over her Instagram. They basically just paid for Instagram commercials for her.
Right, but if she had basically been like, I understand intellectually that like people are going to stream my music or people are going to steal my music, so I'm just going to give out a million free downloads myself, she wouldn't have made any money off it. Instead, she did it through Samsung. She made them do all the work. They paid her. Mm-hmm. And basically, she monetized all this kind of a sub rosa interest in her, which was very surprising. And that's something that is smarter than anything Jay has done with Tidal so far.
So what are we mad at Tidal for, really?
Is that, wow, this is just really nothing.
No, this is a good question, but it's interesting.
It does not provide.
With her being that shrewd about her relationship to the commercialization of herself and, you know, the monetization of her album.
Do you mean specifically, or what are we mad at them for, like, vis-a-vis Rihanna?
Yeah, what actually did Tidal do wrong under these circumstances?
Well, they leaked the album.
Okay.
It seems, allegedly.
Yeah, they apparently uploaded it before. Shouts to corporate, shouts to lawyers. And then it seems as though Rihanna was annoyed and just tweeted out a free link. It was like, here's the album for free, just get it. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the, but I'm skeptical of anything that looks like an accident, because I just don't, there are so many people working, like you said before, they've never screwed anything up in this way. So I'm very suspicious.
So you think there was like, we're going to put it out in like Australia for 2 hours and
maybe
then some random kid will rip it off the internet and then we'll have to like rush it out?
I don't have a theory. I don't have a good working theory yet. I just don't understand how anything that's like at that level.
This is like the Mr. Robot theory.
There is always a Mr. Robot theory.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's funny because our friends Chris Ryan and Sean Fennessy, in their podcast, like, spent an inordinate amount of time beating up on an imaginary button pusher.
Guy, yes.
That's not how it works. I mean, it's just, I don't think that's how it works.
It was funny to think about like this one.
What was it?
Idiot.
What was the name? Like Doug from Tidal?
Doug from Tidal, sabotaging the release.
Poor Doug.
Yeah. Poor Doug.
All right, let's go back to Beyonce. I mean, you want to contrast releases.
Mm-hmm.
So Rihanna, intentionally or otherwise, is having a sort of like a stumble towards release, a coughed up release. Beyonce is just like military, there's like a military clock. And it's just tick, tick, ticking. And then there's a moment. And then, like, literally the entire earth opens up.
Right.
And, like, she just comes out on the top of a mountain. And, like, the sun beams directly on her and only her for 24 hours. I mean,
or
it's just
longer.
Like,
I mean, it's like endless.
It's been 5 days. We're still
talking
about
it. It's not going to end until the end of the tour.
What is the meaning of having something that's that meticulous? Because we spent a lot of time talking about, is there meaning in the Rihanna thing being non-meticulous? Is there meaning in the Beyonce thing being super meticulous?
Yes. I mean, she knew she was performing at the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. It was no secret that was happening. Mm-hmm. The conversation had already been about her, you know, usurpation of the show from Coldplay. I mean, that narrative, which we can discuss in a second.
Do you think Chris Martin just like the minute that song came out, like he just went in the corner and wept?
No. I mean, he seemed overjoyed to like have all the pressure taken off him and the band.
That's a super generous read.
No, I just feel like
And also they, super generous Reed.
They are.
What has Coldplay done? Let's be real. What has Chris Martin done lately?
Except lately, being Mr. they just X put out an album.
No, he did not.
They did.
He's Mr. X Group, so
right.
That's, you, that's
but
it.
But he has. They have an album, and they were legitimately interested in trying to figure out a way to. I mean, they were asked to do the halftime show for a reason.
Is it because when you mail a cardboard box to someone, styrofoam has to fill every available inch?
You are not going to try to get me to both hate on and love on Coldplay. It's just not going
to
happen.
Shouts to every old Coldplay fan that sent me rude emails.
I remember when Coldplay was good. I remember when I liked Coldplay. Well, we all thought it was
what
good.
What dream?
Whenever, they were, they had a song, we'd listen to it. It was fine. It was fine.
Yeah, that was not a thing.
But there was a moment.
Illuminati got you twisted.
Yeah. Look, I'm not going to, Coldplay, I'm agnostic, basically. I can't bring myself. How can anybody bring themselves to hate Coldplay?
Well, it's
not liking Chris Martin is a different thing, right? Okay, John. Okay, John is.
Come on.
This volcano is a bubbling.
Come on, fam.
Okay.
John's not having it.
It's less
of a meditation on the merit or value of Coldplay's work. It's just more of a meditation on anyone's inability to just share a stage with Beyonce. You cannot do it.
Can I tell just a quick story from my childhood?
Please.
By all means.
Now's the time. Okay, so my mom, when I was like 5 or 6, like really understood that I was not interested in eating like anything that I didn't want to eat. Like I was very, very picky. And so one day she started slipping me carob-coated peanuts instead of chocolate-covered
peanuts.
I'm
allergic to chocolate, by the way, so I'm
you're
feeling,
up on this.
I'm feeling this.
So she started slipping them to me, and I didn't say anything at the beginning, but eventually, after like a week or two of this, I was kind of like, Mom, like these taste different. And she was like, well, it's carob. It's like chocolate, but it's good for you. And like she took me to the health food store and like showed me, like, this is what you're eating now. And I was like, get out of here with that fakeness, because like, let's bring it back. Coldplay is carob.
Okay.
You
is.
Win. Fine. Like
it
I
is.
Have no argument against that.
It's a bad simulation of a good band.
No, it's of course. It's silk too. It's like it's silk the milk, not silk the material.
Yes, it's
like
it's okay. Silk. It's silk. It's you too silk.
Yeah. It's
I couldn't tell you a single Coldplay song except for the one
that one
from a long time ago, which I don't even remember what it was called.
The one that goes like
whatever. Yeah. Like I don't know. I feel like.
I can't believe you guys have left me in the position of being like, Coldplay.
I can't believe you stepped up on that pulpit.
But it was only to say that I just reject the Beyonce stole these white boys halftime show. Like, they were fine before she showed up. It went somewhere totally different and better when she got there.
Can you honestly say that the first 3 minutes of that halftime show were enjoyable?
I know you
real
hated
spit.
It.
So no, real spit. You think they were enjoyable?
No, he was off.
Though, as the super bland amuse-bouche that lets you know exactly how good the main course
right.
is.
Oh. Yes.
So that's the one thing it did serve, is that you were kind of like...
We have to make the sound.
That's right.
Because once Beyonce and her girls came out in all their glory, I was just like... It was. Mm-hmm. I started crying.
I was weeping. One of the things I began to sweat, and it was a pleasurable experience. Mm-hmm. And you know, I wanted to try to find a way to write about this, but I got caught up in some other stuff. But I was watching it at a place where the population increased significantly at the end of the second quarter, and so decreased. By even more than that after the halftime show.
Amazing.
So many people texted me or tweeted me, like, get ready. Because I was not watching the Super Bowl. And I was like, thank you, blessed friends.
And all kinds of different people, too. I mean, a lot of women.
Absolutely.
Who were just like, I'm like, what are you doing here? They're like, Beyonce.
The Bay Bowl. It was the Bay Bowl. I mean.
But like, can we just parenthetically shouts to Bruno Mars?
No.
Really?
I'm midway between you guys.
I'm not a
this.
Fan.
I thought Bruno...
At
I
all.
Thought there is a parenthetical, Leslie, in your piece, I think. There is a parenthetical where you... What did you say that he was almost as good as... You said he was almost as good as Beyonce? Did you say that?
As a live performer?
As a anything.
As a live performer,
as
give
a
me
any,
a break. No.
As a gardener.
He...
His face
as like a
me.
Professional golf
this is
instructor.
Not, okay. I don't know what I'm
leave,
looking at.
Leave,
and I, don't,
leave,
I will. As a,
no ad hominem attacks.
Okay. Can I, if I go,
no,
no
I'm
real
with
talk,
you.
If
I'm
I Googled 10 unlikely job occupations. Like, 10 unlikely occupations. I'm willing to bet that 10 for 10, Beyonce is better than Bruno Mars.
Fine. But as a live performer, he could
definitely share the stage with her more than Coldplay. Yes. But when he tried to match her with the two-step, I was like, Bruno.
What? Are you kidding me?
At least he managed to not almost... Don't not be dare. Upright.
That was an homage to the earlier presentation with Destiny's Child.
Michelle.
That was for Michelle. Thank you. That was a throwback to that moment.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's what it was. Nice. Very real overread. But also the transcendence of that moment where she arrives on stage was preordained. I mean, it's preordained 24 hours before. Mm-hmm. And this, what was really striking, and this is something that... I talked about in the roundtable that we all did, which is the Super Bowl halftime show is always presented as something that is in service of the football game. Mm-hmm. It's like these famous people are here, and it's sort of in a weird way, it diminishes the scale of the artist to say like, well, you're famous and you can fill this space, but it's in service of this game. And I feel like this was the first year, and because of how Beyonce played it, where it's very, very clear that the game was just merely a convenient platform for a superstar.
Well, the thing I'll say, though, is that people love to, you know, project this air of incompetence on Beyonce in the sense that they don't think that she's actually doing any of the things around her. They don't think that she's in control. Yeah. She's not the marionette. She's the puppet. And I think it's one of the biggest narratives. Let me just say for a second, I got into an argument on Twitter with people who did not believe that Beyonce knew that she sampled the Challenger explosion sound on her song. Like that, whatever
on
that
Countdown?
Song. Yeah. No, not Countdown. No, not Countdown. EXO. And I was furious. Yes. And they were trying to tell me, okay, well, it's because the samples are labeled weird. And I'm like, who is depriving Beyonce this agency? Like, this drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. People don't talk about that when they talk about Kanye. They don't talk about that when they talk about any other male musician as not being in control of their entire
That's an ongoing, unkillable all the scaffolding narrative
with all women. Frankly, all women, but especially Beyonce. So I feel like I took particular pleasure out of this entire beautifully orchestrated and executed phenomena, minus the one incident, which we will never, ever mention again, that happened on stage after the Millie Rock. I was very moved because you don't ever get to see women, and especially black women, have that kind of agency and command. And it was this thing that was like, yes, I was not on the bill. Yes, I overtook one of the biggest so-called, if you say so, you know, white bands in the world, whatever. I'm going to not only command the stage, I'm going to win the show. Everyone's going to be talking about this to the point where people are trying to stage an anti-formation protest because that's how mad she made
people. I'm going, by the way.
Hello, me too, because we're all going to go and show up and have a little dance off and we're going to see who wins. But I'm just saying, like, it's just a testament to her buying power, her audience reach, and just sort of the entrepreneurship. I mean, she's thinking about this in such a big, grand way.
What do you think the conversations were like leading up to the selection of that song for the performance? Because she's one of the maybe the only person to ever effectively debut a new song. I mean, it's 24 hours old, but it's basically a new song. The song obviously has political content. This is a huge political conversation that had already sprung up in the 24 hours between the dropping of the song and the performance of the song. You know, the NFL is not known for their radicalism. The NFL is not known for their, anything other than like pure USA, USA jingoism. And so I wonder, what do you think the conversation
and domestic violence.
Like? Well, that's, yes. And concussions that do damage to their players. But what do you think the conversations were like? Do you think she was like, I will do this, I will show up, and I will basically rescue this band from completely ruining your halftime show, but it's going to be on these terms?
No, I'm sure that she put a call in, and advertisers were excited. The networks were super stoked. I mean, I just can't imagine an environment where you get word that Beyonce wants to perform at the biggest live event of the year, more or less, and you say no. I just don't.
We've got a call from Tom Brady and John Elway. They do not want this young lady performing at their halftime show because their boys are very interested in in Beyonce. Oh, never mind. Well, by all means, she can.
Well, isn't it?
Let her jest,
but like those are real conversations.
No, but I'm
not jesting at all. Okay, actually, good. I just picked two obvious people who weren't in on the conversation.
Sure,
we could sort of talk about like Roger Goodell and Robert Kraft talking to Les Moonves or whatever about or whoever the right person is at the Moonves level on that side about who also gets to participate in this show, but.
I also wonder if somebody was like, yes, Coldplay, and somebody else was like, what? No.
That
like,
didn't happen.
If you, no, if the equivalent happen. Of the two of you right, were like, this can't happen.
Or like the people like us were like sick on the day of the first meeting.
Yeah.
And then like you show up the next morning at work.
Right, you find out.
And you're like, oh, so what, anything happened yesterday? And it's like, oh yeah, we booked Coldplay for the halftime show.
What?
Yeah.
I'm away for one day? One day I didn't come into the office and you did this?
Wait, but I will say, and this is going to, at this point, given the conversation we've been having, both blasphemous given what we came in here. I can't, no, I'm not even going to say it. Because it's not worth saying, because we came here to talk about Rihanna and Coldplay. Rihanna and Beyonce, yes. Sorry.
Rihanna.
Have mercy.
And I keep Coldplaying. I'm not going to Coldplay anymore.
Don't Coldplay.
I'm hot playing.
So does that mean we're not going to actually pause. Go into you talking about Lady Gaga? We're going to spare you that as well?
No, we can talk about Lady Gaga.
I want to talk about Gaga because...
I'm fine to talk about Gaga because that's amazing to me.
Okay.
I'm totally struck by that. The only thing that I wish I had sort of done differently was... framing in the piece that I wrote, like wondering this, was asserting that the singing of the national anthem basically operates as an opening act for whoever's doing the halftime show. But it is.
Oh, it is.
Like under it's those
so,
circumstances.
It's so far away. Like, can you name?
I can name five.
You can name five.
I think I can do five.
Besides Whitney.
But Whitney, I can. Who's that?
Wesley.
That was a joke. That was just to say that I can go back 5 years.
That's what you're saying.
That's the,
tell me.
Okay, that is
the
single
most
great.
Example.
That's
five.
The most
yeah.
obvious.
Okay.
It's the only national
redeemed.
Answer.
Fine, just redeemed. Name five.
Kelly Clarkson.
Oh, I knew you were going to do that. Sorry, I'm trying to
okay,
a
no,
point.
You're correct.
I'm underscoring a point.
Oh, wait.
So in no way is it the opening act.
Okay, but my point is that it is a thankless job singing the national anthem, singing our country's national anthem at the Super Bowl when you know what's coming.
You're turning into a Republican
in two quarters. No, I'm saying it's a thankless job.
Of
and the
it's,
idea
it's
that Lady Gaga is doing it and not Faith Hill.
Carry on.
Faith Hill's just
carry
not
on.
Getting a half
oh,
time.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
show.
Yeah. Got it, got it.
Lady
got it.
Gaga is not a shot at Faith Hill. It's just like that's the person they ask. That's the sort of person who tends to get asked.
But don't you think that this stage of Gaga's career is basically her reclaiming all the centrist spaces that she so like assiduously
rejected? Which is
rejected.
The thing that I find fascinating about her at this moment. But it was interesting to remember the point at which those two women, Beyonce and Lady Gaga, were the two most important people in popular music.
Everybody read Wesley's piece about Gaga and Beyonce.
It's just true. And and now it seems like she's gone glamcore, if that's even a thing. She's done it.
Yeah, she's doing it.
And she's found a persona. She's found a drag to inhabit for the time being.
But it's a mainstream drag.
Right.
It is a
very sort of like stamped, approved, known place to be in the culture.
Was there anything radical about that performance in your mind?
That it was done straight.
Mm-hmm.
I probably should have hit this note harder because I do believe I am fascinated by this pivot she's made.
Mm-hmm.
But she's made a pivot into a kind of performance space that is somewhere, it's not entirely in quotation marks, but and it's more earnest than that. She has a power that she is sort of laying dormant for now.
Yes. I actually don't think it's in quotation marks at all.
I'm actually more with you. Yeah. I really do think that she means it.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I feel like what she once tried to sell was that was her normal.
Yes.
Now I think what I'm feel like I'm coming to understand is like that whole thing was quotation marks.
She's a theater geek who can't believe her dreams are coming true.
Yes.
With all due respect to her dreams.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that fascinates me about her pivot versus what Beyonce has become is, I mean, Beyonce has become a planet.
Yeah.
She's
become an entire galaxy.
She is a galaxy.
Self-sustaining and fully functional.
Right. I mean,
there's a whole NASA division devoted to
her. Yeah, thank God. Finally.
What a relief.
She is her own NASA division.
Sorry.
I mean, what? And I feel like the thing that I keep coming back to is 4 years ago, 5 years ago, the Harry Belafonte finger wag at them, at Jay-Z and Beyonce and such other people.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, you young black people, when I was your age, when I was literally your age, I was risking my life every day to make this country a better place for our people.
Hmm.
What are you people doing?
Mm-hmm.
You're not doing anything.
Well, you know, there's a real politics of visibility, though.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I think that is what you're seeing, and that's sort of what, and that's why people went ham over formation, because, and a lot of the conversations around it have been, you know, debating how politically aware and active she is. I mean, I think she's just demonstrating that by just rejoicing in things and her existence and things that were typically, you know, you would be told not to do, or things you would be shamed for doing, like having really colorful weaves in, or even, God forbid, you brought your own damn condiments to the restaurant, or acting so-called ghetto, you know, like, and I think that embracing that, and even Cam Newton, you know, giving that talk after the Super Bowl and sort of refusing to meet
to play that
the reporters
game. Yeah,
on their terms and just saying, I am good enough. In fact, I'm better than enough, and I'm not exceptional. This is actually the norm. You just don't see it because we're the only ones in the spotlight. And I think that to me what feels to be different about Beyoncé in this song and this particular moment in time. And I think that's why people are going crazy for her. And I can't think of any other artist.
There's nobody
at all who's commanding the conversation.
But I also think there's one additional level to what you just said, because this divide that you're talking about between implicit politics and explicit politics, people who are overtly making political statements and people who are by politics of visibility or gesture are doing acts, committing acts of politics on a popular scale, on a mass pop level. I think a lot about the transition of hip hop from the late 80s into the early 90s, and people saying, well, oh, the visibility of the late 90s, of the mid to late 90s, you know, from Dr. Dre and the West Coast into Puffy, Bad Boy, the shiny suit era, and saying, well, that's when hip hop lost its political edge. And I always thought, well, that's an entirely different form of politics. Mm-hmm. It's a politics of black capitalist success. It's a politics of, as you say, of visibility. And I was always feeling that it was strange that people would malign that particular generation when I thought that generation was doing tremendous work of exposing, of cultural exposure. And what I think you're starting to see of that generation, and Jay is sort of part of that generation, you're starting
He's
to
definitely
see
that, part of that generation.
You're seeing that generation feeling more comfortable with their success. They don't feel like their success is evanescent, that it's not going to go away in 2 years. They're building businesses, they're building brands.
Empires. Yes.
So, as it were. And so I think what you're seeing, and you see this in formation, is the rendering explicit of what has been implicit for the last 10 to 15 years.
See,
because I'm not convinced that Beyoncé's doing very much that's different than she did 3 to 5 years ago. It's little, the gestures are,
they're more loaded than they previously were.
They're more loaded, but it's not that they weren't there.
Well, she
before.
Also wields more buying power, and she wields a lot more, she commands a lot more. I mean, 3 to 5 years ago, well, she did do the Super Bowl 3 years ago, but 5 years ago, I mean, I don't know. To me, it feels especially poignant because the gender thing makes a big difference to me, because I feel like we're at this really interesting point in American history where black women just aren't seen at all. And in fact, it's fascinating that the immediate response was like, oh, well, Beyonce's calling for people to riot, or she's calling for violence. And that was never the conversation with Bad Blood and Taylor Swift, which actually is a video
about
violence, you know?
Like, very literal.
And so it says a lot about how we view the black female body in our country. And so to me, it feels, when I think about 90s era hip hop, I think of men. I don't know. I just feel like there is this demographic that feels not seen. And I think it's mostly black women. And I think it's black straight women. I mean, I know the video was supposed to feel very inclusive. And I guess in a way it was, and that it called out to a lot of things about black gay culture, but not really black gay women, I don't think. But I just feel like that's why it's such a big deal, is that it feels like Beyoncé is sort of turning around. And Beyoncé's been so inaccessible for her entire career. Mm-hmm. And so I just feel like,
is she any more accessible? I mean, she's
still not
accessible,
she's
still
oblique,
but she's, to me.
But at least she's saying, I see you.
I think she's showing more.
I think she's showing more. And
I don't
that,
think she's
yeah.
giving more, but
yeah.
I think she's showing
But I mean,
more.
Think about, like, she's at a stage in her career, and I wonder about this, like, where everything that she does now is just a mic drop. Everything's a mic drop.
But that, it feels accidental, but it's so deliberate. That's
no,
the most
I agree,
thing.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, she's dropping
the most
mic.
Deliberate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I tried to get at this when we were talking earlier this weekend. I just feel like the art could do more than be visible, than make herself visible, right?
Yes.
Because, you know, Maurice White died last week, and I've been thinking a lot about Earth, Wind, and Fire, and how secretly radical that music was.
Absolutely.
And the stuff in those songs is just, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And they were thoroughly integrated, coherently woven into the music. Mm-hmm. The music was inextricable from the ideas. The ideas drove the music. It would be impossible to not recognize. There was nothing oblique about what Earth, Wind & Fire was up to in the 70s. Like, that's just one act of dozens that were politically conscious, groove-oriented, not afraid of the conflation of what music can make a body do, but also what it can do to a mind.
But I think that's happening, and I think that's why you see, you know, you see J. Cole, you see Kendrick, even the internet, you have people who are writing songs about what's happening in our country right now and who are performing it. And I think Beyoncé's politics are going to be more muted because I don't know that she even feels comfortable. I don't want to project. Everyone's been projecting so much on her based on this video, which she hasn't said word one about, by the way.
This is what I was getting to about the mic drop.
So which we just need more. But I feel like there is a tipping point, and I think it's happening right now in terms of the activation and
politicization, and
the sort of taking on. I think there, for a long time, maybe artists didn't feel like they were responsible for speaking on behalf, and that, you know, we contain multitudes. I'm not sure that they should, but I do think you'll start to see more. I would hope
financial success was its own reward in a way for a long time.
Well, that was one of her points,
that's the relic of the mid to late 90s. I mean, I think when it comes to political expression in contemporary black music, everybody's like, well, we're making money, we're doing okay. Like, that's actually a political expression of itself. And then the Kendrick and J. Cole moment that you're talking about is, I think, the beginning of the backlash to that idea, where it's like, actually, we can be groove-oriented, we can be politically savvy, we can be overt, and also sell a million records.
Right.
And that's just not something that I think really anyone was talking about in 2006, for example, or 2009.
It's just fleshing out. Like, you can just make... I mean, you can make protest music that looks lots of different ways. You can be D'Angelo and make Black Messiah. You can be, you know, it can look different. I don't know. And I think there's just more room for that.
And I'm not taking anything away from her. But there is a follow-up question.
But do you want more? Is what you're saying that you want her to speak?
I want the music to speak
louder,
more explicitly. I don't know. I just feel like I know where she can do anything. Mm-hmm. And at this point, as you said, I mean, she's got our attention.
Mm-hmm.
Our attention isn't going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait for this album to come out because it will answer all of these questions, obviously.
I don't know if it will at all. I don't think it has to.
I'm inclined to think it won't.
I'll defend Beyonce to the day I die, and I fiercely feel strongly that she can make the music she wants. Like, I feel like there should just be 10 other artists who have that stage.
I hope it doesn't sound like I'm saying she has to do X, Y, or Z.
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't.
I'm not saying that. I know she knows what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is just one song on an album.
To be a polemic. You think it's going to be polemical of some sort.
I wonder. It can't not be. She's playing with too much fire, too much iconography, too much history, too many politics, too much idea. There's too much going on in this one iteration.
You're right, and it's fascinating too how, like, I've been reading all the takes and the second takes and it's so fun. I feel like I'm in grad school, and I feel like there was a couple of really good thoughts on how the video played into this idea of even Great Migration, you know, just sort of like going from Louisiana to California. I mean, even though we know the video wasn't necessarily filmed in New Orleans anymore, but just sort of invoking this why black culture looks the same all over our country and sort of invoking even this sort of just sort of how deep it goes. I mean, it would be great.
I think she will, but I think in a weird way with this song and this video and all this conversation to get Drunk in Love 2, I don't know. I'm not objecting.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not.
Give me some more watermelon. I want it. I want it.
Not to shift it at this moment, but speaking of a Drunk in Love 2 or songs of that nature, I feel like we spent a lot of time talking about Beyonce, and all of a sudden, like, Rihanna's feeling really invisible.
Well, the two of them have always operated from very different principles.
Yes.
Beyonce's always been the super prep school, perfect little big sister. Mm-hmm. Rihanna has always been the delinquent, the one that the mom's like, why can't you be like Rihanna?
That's
always been more like Beyonce.
Yeah.
What if Beyonce's contribution to this moment in time is, we have had enough black death. We have had enough pain. I want to give you something that brings you joy and makes you feel good and proud of who you are. What if that's her contribution? That's all I'm saying. What if her contribution is love, light, and happiness?
She's powerfully capable of offering that. Yes.
Yeah, I think she is.
But you feel it would be an abdication?
No. No, I think it is entirely possible for her to make a Stevie Wonder record that does all of the things that, for instance, a Stevie Wonder record does. While also, or even like Aretha Franklin, like Young, Gifted, and Black is,
oh God, I love
there's
that. Yeah.
So much going on that album. And she doesn't get credit as an album artist, obviously. But Young, Gifted, and Black, it's a civil rights record, but it is also just a good soul record. It's doing two things simultaneously most of the album.
Forget Beyonce or Rihanna. Is there anybody in the current space who you feel is working that territory effectively? Like, do you think Kendrick is?
Kendrick,
do you think Cole is?
Well, he's, I mean, I think the D'Angelo. Next thing Kendrick does is going to be, I think he's going to, it'll have totally synthesized the processing of To Pimp a Butterfly.
Well, also new Kanye, right? Like, Kanye always has opinions, and he has a very specific viewpoint on the Black experience in America, particularly in this political context. So I'm excited for that, because I feel like he will have things to say, and people, he also commands attention in a very unique way.
So before we go, I mean, you go, John, and then I want to.
We still don't talk about Rihanna.
Raise a question. Oh, right. Sorry.
I love. But I'm laughing because, like, how can you compete? You can't compete with Beyonce.
But that's
why
the thing.
Smiling.
Like, I thought, like, you know, you looked on Twitter right when Beyonce dropped the video, and like within a second, like someone was like, Beyonce didn't even give Rihanna a week. Like, didn't even give her 10 days or whatever.
And
the
what's
number
the story there? Is there a story? Who knows?
TBD? I feel like, yes.
TBD.
I agree.
TBD.
I wonder about that. Really.
But Rihanna has always occupied a very different space. And that's the thing. And women who don't necessarily see themselves in Beyonce, which I'll count myself in that crowd too. Like, I'm not a Beyonce, you know, but she occupies a special, Rihanna occupies a special place in all of our hearts because, look, she goes to Carnival. She holds a baby half naked. She puts a drink on her.
We could be Rihanna.
We are Rihanna. The three of us right now are Rihanna in spirit, body, and soul right now. Like, she's everybody. And so I think Rihanna has always, and that's the thing. It's like people who are devoted to her will always seek her out and find her. So I don't know.
And why were you so motivated? Because you wrote a piece about being motivated by this record.
Yes.
And why were you so motivated? Because this record, I've listened to it more since writing about it. I feel like I've warmed up to it quite a bit.
Same
but it
here.
Still feels chaotic to
oh
me.
Oh, my gosh.
And not like Brittany and Kevin chaotic. Like, you know, chaotic.
I don't need an album to play start to finish. That's not how I listen to music anymore, if I ever did. But I don't need to turn... Track 1 through 12 needs to be a symphony. It's like I skip around. I want to hear the songs that I want to hear. I like this album because I feel like it's the album she wanted to make. It's the album she made without someone telling her what she needed to do in order to be successful. I feel like it's the album she was like, look, I've won 7 Grammy. Whatever. She's one of, you know, I think she was just like, I want to see what my sound looks like. I want to know what my voice sounds like. And you hear it. And
yes.
The voice
is
so
beautiful.
The
voice is real. And that is.
And pop music does not touch me. I dance to pop music. I try to twerk. I can't twerk. I try when it, you know, the songs come on. But like I listen to it and I feel the same kinds of emotions I felt after realizing that Amy Winehouse's music was so much about her life. It feels emotional.
I will also say that Rihanna also released a protest record last year. I mean, basically, American Oxygen it's not a good song, but I mean,
it's not on Anti,
but it is, I mean, she is also somebody who's obviously aware. She has opinions. There's sometimes, quote, the wrong opinions, unquote, but like, she's no problem speaking for herself.
And living for herself.
And living, right, exactly.
That's the thing,
No, the kind of almost the liquidity with which Rihanna lives her public life, it's such a, I don't want to say a rebuke of how Beyonce lives her public life, but it's certainly a rejoinder to
it's mystique versus opacity, right?
Yes.
I mean, Rihanna is compelling because she's mysterious. Beyonce, there's a firewall even when you're
looking at
five
it,
feet away from her. And all of that joy that she gives you when she performs, I feel like just shuts off the minute she leaves the stage in a weird way.
Let's listen to a Rihanna song right now. What should we listen to?
Work. No? All right.
I like
what
Love on the Brain.
Love on the Brain. Needed Me.
Needed Me.
I like Needed Me.
Needed Me.
All right. Should we do Needed Me?
Okay.
All right. Let's listen to a little bit of Needed Me.
Never thought you could have it. You need.
to confess. But baby, who you need in me?
Another thing about Rihanna that I find charming is, you know, Beyonce is also so much about the projection of perfection, even though what she's projecting as perfect is obviously imperfect sometimes. But Rihanna is all about the airing of imperfections. Like, Rihanna is, you know, she's live streaming, you know, her Instagram's messy. Mm-hmm.
She's gritty.
Like, yeah, she's just sort of like, I am giving you imperfect angles. I'm giving you of the moment things. And that, when you say that Anti feels like a genuine album to you, through that lens, that makes a lot of sense to me, especially because it is. I mean, can you imagine Beyonce putting out an album that sounds like Anti?
Well,
yeah, I can.
Four was a little bit like that for me. Four was very all over the place.
Yes.
One plus one, who runs the world.
But it's super polished.
It's great. Yeah, that's my favorite. That's one of my favorite albums.
I feel like Beyonce, as much as $1 million as Beyonce sounds, mm-hmm. I feel like that album... there is grit and rawness and realness and stank and funk on that record that is not that is real. But it also is interesting because in laying these two artists and opposing these two people to each other, and just listening to you talk about the authenticity of Anti, it does sort of play into this thing that I feel like Beyonce is still struggling for, which is to be taken seriously, not as an artist,
as a human,
or as a woman, but as like a human being. Yeah. The exhilaration of the hot sauce line and the the Jackson 5 line.
And the Red Lobster line.
And the Red Lobster line. I mean, Bama. This is like, I put my pants on one leg at a time, just like everybody else.
Right.
I'm aware
right.
of you these. Know? I'm aware of these.
Right. Not only am I aware of them, right, exactly. Yeah. I experience them.
Yeah.
And it's, I think about her in a similar way that I think about Hillary Clinton in a weird way. Hillary has been in this game for a minute, and she's still fighting to convince people that she, like, breathes air.
That she's not a robot.
Right. Mm-hmm. That she's not something from Blade Runner, but like an actual person.
Yeah.
We still don't know.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Strong TBD.
We still don't know. The thing about Beyonce at this point, listening to the lyrics of that song and how much of it, and this has like been an ongoing thing. It's not new with Beyonce, but she's still struggling with this. And it does sound like a struggle to me to be persuasively real, to be truly, viscerally real, to be Red Lobster hot sauce in my purse real. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so on that RIP Wesley Morris's Twitter mentions note.
Does that sound crazy to me?
No, I thought that was brilliant. I like that quite a bit.
No.
I do want to ask a question, and it's to do with what we almost were talking about with Kanye. Don't you feel like there are a number of game-changing things underway right now,
mm-hmm.
where
sure.
between Rihanna and Beyonce and in a different but not too distant corner, Adele, mm-hmm. these people are all looking at each other, especially the black artists, and being like, wow, I mean, I have a responsibility to do X, Y, or Z. And I think Kanye, that's never left Kanye. Kanye, his strength is mm-hmm. his sense of persecution. Sometimes it's too strong. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited to see what music comes out of. This is what the thing we wanted to happen.
This is what we wanted
2 years ago.
Right. This is your Earth, Wind, and Fire moment,
right.
though.
Right.
Do you see it now?
Yeah, I see it.
Okay.
I see it now.
You see it now.
And if we're going to talk about that music coming, I mean, with Kanye, I would say it already came on Yeezus.
Right. No, like, absolutely.
Like it's funny. Yes. It was funny to go to the Kanye 808s and Heartbreak show in L.A. a few months ago and people be like, man, you know, it's just so crazy how influential this record has become and how, you know, basically the sound of hip-hop and the subsequent 5 years was all sort of molded by this. And I literally cannot wait for the Yeezus concert in like 2019 or 2020.
Mm-hmm. I'll be there.
When basically all of the things, all of the agitation, all of the persecution, all of the tension starts to spill over into all these other artists who are around and keeping their eye on Kanye.
Yeah.
I mean, what's remarkable is that without ever having to address some of these issues, maybe directly, I guess, with the exception of Kanye, like on their albums, just by existing in the world and seeing how people interact with them, like brings forth all of these conversations about how they are received as people, right. as I mean, black yes. people
Killer
in
Mike,
America.
Killer Mike has this been, I feel like he's like, well, what took y'all so long? But like, what does it do to Drake, for instance? Where does this put a
person
like
Drake?
Are
you really
like
about to Drake? Bring up Drake? We're almost at the, yeah, we're at it's, the it's, end. It's not,
we are in a moment.
How are you going to bring up Drake? At the turn down. We're,
sorry.
Listen.
For what it's worth, I mean, let's to put a bow on that, because I think it's a fair question, but I think you can already say that the Drake counter-narrative exists, and it exists in the form of J. Cole, it exists in the form of Kendrick. This is something that's already in motion. And I think Drake's reckoning with it on this forthcoming album, a guess is to not reckon with it at all and to sort of assume that the counter narrative is not going to become the dominant narrative. But I'm of the mindset, and this is something that I wrote about last year, that quote unquote silent majority, like the people who are basically like, I'm out here buying Kendrick records, I'm out here buying Cole records, that we're going to get to a place where that actually replaces the current dominant narrative.
But
I'm not sure if Drake will choose to be a part of that or not.
The only point that I can make about Drake, though, is that, again, I think his existence and him being this sort of so-called confusing, conflicting amalgamation of what people think of when they think of black male masculinity is in itself, regardless of the music, a protest. It is in itself. That's what I'm trying to get at, which is that, like, I think that even beyond what the music says, just that there is this variety of type of black in the public view is unto itself challenging the status quo.
I guess maybe I'm thinking of this in a limited way, because Jenna, you are 100% correct.
Thank you.
That is.
Sorry.
For the record, that was not a thank you of like a genuine. That was like a thank you I already knew. That was not a thank you like I
Venmo
appreciate.
Venmo me $5 yeah, for that spit, for helping spit. You get a little more woke.
It's.
I
am not your woke doctor.
Is that a woke emoji? Did you go to work with a woke emoji?
I'm not your wokeologist. These people are all friends with each other.
No, you're right.
They're
all
in each
all
other's
worlds.
But that's good. That's good.
Competition. Like,
they can be. Competition it can be friendly.
No, it's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, I want to know what this is. Mm-hmm. You couldn't not deal with this 40 years ago. Just about everybody, major at the top, was on that tip. And I am really curious. And I know things work differently with optics now and having a visual scape to go along with your sonic scape. But I'm curious to see who changes and how. Or like who deepens and how.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
On that note, let's actually listen to Kanye West, No More Parties in L.A. to go out.
I love it.
Fair enough.
No more parties in L.A. Please, baby, no more parties in L.A. Friday night trying to make it into the city. Breakneck speed, passage to see something pretty. Thinking back to how I got here in the first place. Second class bitches wouldn't let me on first base. A backpack in good with luxury taste buds. And the Louis Vuitton still got all of my pay stubs. Yeah, he's the from Beast I did for to get more famous. When did I become A-list? I wasn't even on A-list. Strippers get invited to where they only get hired. When I get on my C job, somebody gonna get fired. I was uninspired.
And that's our New York Times podcast. Thank you, Wesley Morris. Thank you, Jenna Wortham. You can read myself, Wesley, and Jenna on Beyonce's Formation. You can read Wesley on Lady Gaga. You can read Jenna on Rihanna. Myself on Rihanna, all at nytimes.com/music. Subscribe to the New York Times podcast. Check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, wherever you get podcasts. Our producers are Jocelyn Gonzalez and Mike Cordero. Come check us out next week.